Hey there. Welcome to one of our first stories of the podcast. I'm David All, and this is Belly of the Beast Life Stories and Beyond. In season three, we shouldered up with you and made it clear that this podcast is not for sale. No advertising or outside influence, a sacred and safe space. Starting with season three, we dedicate a poem to one of our listeners that is standing with us as an enabler of our mission. They're doing so by chipping in $5 at bellystory.com. To be true to our word, we're going back through some of our earlier content in seasons one and two and removing the segments that we feel may not be congruent with this idea. So enjoy. This story, like every other story on our podcast, is now 100% advertising free. A safe space where you can let your guard down, listen, and notice if something comes up in your soul. If you would like to be an enabler, and we certainly could use your help, visit bellystory.com and chip in $5 today. Now, here's that extraordinary life story.
But I never thought of, you know, going back to soccer. I felt Shaolin Temple is the place that, you know, rejuvenated me completely and gave me a second life, I would say.
This podcast is about the time we all get knocked down in life and climb up a new person. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. Let me introduce you to Harsh Verma. Harsh was born and raised in Mumbai, India. He grew up in and around Bollywood filmmaking and worked as an assistant director for big feature films. He was also a professional soccer player, what he calls his first love. He played for junior clubs within India and international at AC Milan junior team and Leicester City junior in England. After a knee surgery and a botched recovery, Harsh went searching for better medicine. In China, he surrendered to the famous Shaolin Temple and was later adopted as the first Indian and non-Chinese national warrior monk. Harsh Verma, welcome to Belly of the Beast Life Stories.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me today.
So tell us about this bone tumor.
So I've always been an athlete, you know, even in boarding school since I was playing soccer in school days. I've always done like athletics, 200 meters, 100 meters, 4x100 to 4x200, and also high jump. So I've been on really high dosage of calcium. I love milk. I used to have 1 liter of milk every day. Like my mother was so, you know, just be like, oh, how much milk do you drink? So because of calcium and because of consuming milk, you know, having calcium tablets, there was too much calcium in my body, which led to a deformity called osteochondroma, which deposits extra calcium, and it turns out to grow as an extra bone in your. So it happened to me in my knee, and that's where I started having restrictions of not being able to do a lot of athletic things, any physical activities. So that was a really shock to me. So I went and saw a doctor, and the doctor was like, "If you want to do physical activities, you want to like kick, jump, run, you need to get this bone out." And I was like, okay, so is it like a really big deal? Will I have any problems after I get the surgery? Like, no, you're just going to be needing good physiotherapy. And then you'll be fine. Okay, we agreed on the surgery date. Everything was going fine. I was really confident and, you know, went with all the confidence in the operation theater. The interesting part was when they gave me the anesthesia, so they were giving me just anesthesia for my lower body, which is called the epidural in the backside. So the needle broke, and then they were like, oh, what the hell? And I was like, why did that happen? Like, oh, your muscle fibers are too strong. And I was like, okay, so what do we do? And then like, we'll give you general anesthesia where you just completely, you know, just sleep, basically. I said, okay, fine. And then that happened. Next thing I wake up, you know, I'm coming out of this. And later on, I got to know my recovery wasn't really good, honestly. And the reason was because while they were performing the surgery, they opened my, you know, my the side of my knee, my thigh muscle, and they saw while they were getting the extra bone out, they saw there's a tumor attached to it, which was as big as the size of a golf ball, and it was in the middle of my thigh muscles. So they were like, this was really shocking to them. So they had to, you know, cut off a little bit of my thigh muscle. And then so the small surgery became a big surgery. And that's how the tumor came in my leg. But it was non-cancerous. And that's what the story of my surgery and my bone tumor.
So coming out of that, you said the recovery was not very strong. It was not very good.
No, the recovery was not good at all. I thought I was going to be very confident, but it took away everything from me. It took away my confidence. It took away from me to be even in hope of walking or running, whatever. And
Wait. Let's back up. So you just had the surgery and they found an extra bone tumor growing on in between your thigh, right?
Right.
They had to remove a part of your thigh muscle.
A little bit, yes.
And then you wake up and what happens?
I mean, I'm fine. I'm just, you know, in the recovery room and I have stitches on my leg and they're like, oh, you'll have a proper recovery. You know, now you have to stay in the hospital for 2 days and then you'll be discharged. And I said, okay. But it was paining a lot. I used to like wake up with a lot of pain. Knee surgeries are never advisable and never easy. And so they send a physiotherapist, you know, the hospital sends you physiotherapists. So they used to come at home. I was on a wheelchair. And I was literally, I was bedridden. I couldn't walk. Everywhere I was going was, you know, either I had a walker or a wheelchair. And the physiotherapist used to come home and make me do these exercises. And I was never feeling anything. I never felt anything was improving. And it was just, you know, the thought which was stuck in my head was, hey, they chopped off some of my thigh muscle, which just takes away a lot of strength from my quads. So I was like, how can this, you know, how can I recover? Do I need to, I mean, I have to eat a lot. I have to exercise to build the muscles around that's missing now. I was just really upset because there was no improvement for months and months.
What age was this?
I was 19.
Okay. So you had already stopped playing soccer at this point?
I had already stopped playing soccer at this point. I finished my university. I had graduated and I assisted directed on like two feature films, you know, because of my father. He was working on them. And I just couldn't do anything physical activities. And it took away a lot of my confidence. It took away a lot of my motivation, I would say, to do something. I started doing yoga in my bed, but, you know, just feel so trapped. And, you know, I had people just coming home, my friends, my cousins, you know, trying to console me and, you know, give me grief. they're really nice people. I don't blame them. But, I mean, just imagine just, you know, people are being able to just walk and you're not being able to walk normally. That was a really big, it took a big toll on me.
How many months?
5 to 6 months. Yeah, because the seventh month I went, I started traveling. I went for a recovery period. Yeah.
So those 5 or 6 months, were you pretty much bedridden?
I was just inside my house. And if there were any physio appointments and that I needed to go to some physio centers because of the machines, I used to travel with my father or my cousin or someone used to come drive me there. Yeah.
So I think a lot of people can relate to feeling way worse after a surgery, right?
Or, right.
You know, they should be feeling better. And right. All of a sudden it's like their life is
right
in a difficult spot. Were you doing anything? I mean, you said you were trying to do yoga, but were you doing anything mentally to try to help you sort of regain some?
I couldn't fathom the thought of, you know, being okay, because I know this therapy which was going on was really not helping me. And
the physiotherapy.
And I used to feel really bad for my mother, because I used to sleep in her room. And you know, she has a small like sofa cum bed kind of thing in her room where she used to sleep there. I used to sleep on the bed. And I used to wake up middle of the night with a lot of pain. So she used to get me ice pack and some medicines, you know, every night. So I used to feel bad that, you know, because of me, she's having sleepless night. And I just wanted this to get over, you know, just this whole pain to get over and, you know, just me start walking again. That was my main motive, just start walking first.
Did you have a wheelchair or crutches?
Yeah, I had a wheelchair. I had crutches. I had both. Yeah.
What were the doctors saying about recovery?
The doctors were saying because
they said I was going to be fine.
Yeah. So doctors said that I have to do what the physiotherapist is telling me to do, and I have to eat a lot of proteins and that was your only solution, to just do what the physio is telling you to do.
And it wasn't working, or you didn't want to do the regimen?
It wasn't working. I was doing everything they asked me to, but it wasn't working. It just felt really robotic. Their routine was robotic because, you know, it's like you just pay, you know, together for the surgery and the physio. I think it's like a package. And they were just doing it because they had a time frame to give me or something. And it just wasn't helping. Nothing was helping for me to get better and better because I'm an athlete. You need to start to make me walk normally, like a normal person walking. You can't just directly look at me just because I'm an athlete. So you start treating me like an athlete. That's what I understand now because I studied medicine, Chinese medicine now, and that's what I understood. You can't directly do something that you are in your profession. First, you need to do things normally in your life as an individual, and then start getting into your profession. Does that make sense? So if I've had a broken leg, I can't start running. I need to start walking first, just like how everybody does. And I think that's where they were missing, you know, missing piece was out there.
Were you also feeling depressed?
I was very depressed. I was just frustrated and I was just playing my Xbox in my room and I was just removing my frustration out there.
Do you feel like that time was wasted?
My mother blames me that I went and took this decision of getting this surgery done really like in a haste. And I don't know, but it needed to be done one day or the other. And time was definitely getting wasted because I really wanted to go out there and train because I've always been like physically doing things, physical activities, either like in the gym or gymnastics, soccer, something or the other. And if I don't sweat, I don't feel good.
But were you still able to work on films?
No, in that period of time, no. I was just reading things, yeah, magazines and books. I was trying to, you know, just trying to mentally divert myself.
Yeah.
But then I had a blessing in disguise who came to me, who's a professional martial artist. He's like an older brother to me. And he told me, you should start meditating and blending martial art exercises to make your legs stronger. And I said, where can I find this? And he's like, why don't you go outside the city to get, you know, heal yourself? We have Ayurveda, Ayurvedic medicine. Or something more if you want. You can go abroad or something. So I said, okay, I'm going to do some research. And that's where I started researching on my laptop. I sat there. I was like, okay, what kind of therapies I can do? So there was Ayurvedic. There was something in Thailand. And there was something in China. So I was looking at Asian countries because, you know, it's close by to go there. And first I decided that I'll go to Thailand. My father has a business partner there. You know, probably they can take care of me or something. They can tell me what I can do out here. And so the martial arts that they do is called Muay Thai. And I wasn't too well versed with that. And when I saw these videos and stuff, I was like, oh, this martial art is brutal. I don't know what kind of exercise they're going to make me do. But first, right now, I need to fix my leg. I need to go to a place where there's like normal, you know, therapy that I can fix my leg. So then my search narrowed down to in China. China's famous for acupuncture therapy. And I was like, oh, needles are fine. Needles are not a big deal for me. And because I've gone through like a big surgery, so needles are like really, really small now. And yeah, so that's where my search narrowed to the acupuncture.
Okay, and then what?
And then in Beijing, there was a really big hospital. They said that they can do the therapy, but the cost was too much and I didn't have that much in my savings. And I was like, oh, you know, China's a nice place, but how do I go there? Where do I go there? And then this older brother of mine, my older brother, he told me that you should look at Shaolin Temple.
This is the martial artist that you mentioned?
Yeah.
The professional
martial artist, yes. He's like, look at Shaolin Temple. They might have something. You know, they'll you know, you'll be out there. At least there's going to be meditation. There's going to be martial arts. You know, you should talk to them. And it was up in like in the mountains and the villages. So I was kind of concerned that does anybody speak English out there? Because I definitely don't speak Chinese at all. I don't even know ni hao. And then I went on the website. I sent an email to the Foreign Affairs office. I asked them what do they provide and how they can help me. they asked me to share my reports with them, my surgery reports, my x-ray reports. And they said, oh, this is basic, you know, we can do this. It's not like you're injured. This is after injury, the recovery post in surgery. And I said, oh, are you sure? Like, yeah, you come for the therapy. You know, the doctor is going to be there. He's going to make you do some exercises. The master who's going to make you do the exercises, they'll coordinate with them and tell you what you need to do. And we have meditation. So yeah, you know, everything can be done, worked out for you. So don't worry. This is the fees. This is the deposit you need to send. And And then I spoke to my martial artist brother, and he told me that you should definitely do this. If you found out so much, and this is a sign that this is your calling, you should definitely go and fix your knee if this is something you really want to do. And I was like, oh, so now how do I convince my parents? Because China. So he tried to talk to my parents first. And then it was very difficult for my parents initially to even like fathom the thought of me going to China, because like, oh, why don't you go to the UK? Why don't you go to Canada? Why don't you go to the US? We have family all over. I was like, yeah, we Indians are all over, but not in China. So that's what their insecurity was, right? And they saw the pictures of the place that I'm going to, and they saw, you know, the things that the temple is going to provide me with. And it was basically an argument that I won. And that's why I took off and I went there. Yeah, that's how I went to Shaolin Temple.
So Harsh, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about like what you're thinking, like describe the Shaolin Temple for us from like your perspective, sitting there in bed, looking at your laptop or whatever. And you're like, just describe what's going through your head as you're thinking about this opportunity.
So while I was doing my research about the Shaolin Temple, the pictures weren't like as fancy as, you know, we would like it to be. It was very old pictures, you know, probably from like 10, 15 years ago. And, you know, when we see something like this, it gets really hard for us to trust such things, right? Because at that point of time, I was just like in a really different mental space. And I was just looking for getting recovered really fast, or find a place where I can be recovered at. It was really like, you know, those red bricks, those red walls, and the gray surface, the gray flooring, very typical Shaolin. And I saw pictures of monks out there, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be among these sacred people. Wow. And it was very, very intriguing. It was very surprising that, okay, I can go to this place and I can actually get my leg fixed. And I was skeptical initially, because like I said, I judged the pictures initially. And when I called them and I emailed them, I didn't hear back from them and nobody answered the phone. So I was like, is this place even real? And then my martial artist brother, he told me, oh, you know, it's going to be exactly like the movie in 36 Chambers of Shaolin, or the Jet Li movie, Shaolin Temple, where they have these many schools around, they have many monks training there, many kids training there. And, you know, they'll have this one section where, you know, they're going to be having the medicine section where they're going to be training you. They'll be treating you, sorry. And then, you know, you'll be having a training hall. So don't worry, it's all real. Like, you know, it's basically, it's a city of like just kung fu people. I said, okay, but nobody's answering me. Nobody's replying to me. Like, what's going on? Like, is this place real? Like, are you just talking because you've seen the movies, you know? And he's like, no, you just be at it. You know, just send them your stuff, you know, ask questions. And I didn't want to go with any kind of expectations about the way the place would be. The only expectation I was going with was to fix my knee.
And so you boarded a flight and off you went?
I had a very hard time convincing my parents. And I sent the deposit. I made the big leap. If you want to do something really different, if you want to be out there and make a change for your own self, you need to take that big risk.
So the Shaolin Temple is known for having the roots of Kung Fu.
Right.
But it's also like a alternative medicine facility.
Right. So Shaolin Temple is based on the three basic principles, as called in Chinese, we say Chan, Wu, and Yi. So Chan is like Buddhism, the Zen part. The Zen Buddhism part, Wu is Wushu, that's martial arts, and Yi is Yiyao, the medicine part. These are the three basic principles of the Shaolin Temple. And the roots of Shaolin are based on these three principles. So Shaolin Temple is just not a place of martial arts. It's a place of Buddhist philosophy, Zen Buddhism. That's where Zen Buddhism took birth. That's where Kung Fu martial arts, I wouldn't say took birth out there, but it was given to China by the monk called Bodhidharma. He's the father of Shaolin. He's the founder of Shaolin culture. And the medicine. He made medicine sitting up in the wild through the leaves, through the plants.
He was Indian?
He was an Indian eminent monk, yes, from the south of India. He was a 28th patriarch of Gautam Buddha, of Buddha. And he was from a very big, wealthy family. He was a king's son. He was a prince himself as well. And he had thoroughly trained his army in the South Indian martial art then, before even Kung Fu came, called Kalaripayattu, Kaleri in short. And that's what he took out there when he fled. He didn't flee, sorry. When he left India to go to China.
Okay, so at this point, you're still feeling really crummy.
I am, because they put the first session of my acupuncture, I had 30 needles on my right thigh, like my right leg. And those ant crawling on your body kind of sensations inside was there. But I was feeling confident that this place is the place that I needed to be. And this is the place where I will evolve stronger.
So maybe that was like a spiritual shift.
Yeah.
Something was happening.
Yeah. It was definitely a spiritual shift. It gave me it made me feel more relaxed, more confident as to observing the environment that I am in. And I think I also had my own space, freedom of, not feeling trapped inside a room, because it's a place which is just open, you know. And it's a big campus, and it's a very beautiful campus. If you ever get a chance, you should definitely visit there. And just the people out there, and they were just so relaxingly and just easily just, doing this therapy on me as if it's something that they keep on doing, you know. They're just magical hands, magical fingers, yeah.
And could you communicate?
So the Foreign Affairs Office, they used to come once a week to translate. So that was the only way of communication. So I had my phone at that time when I was in the pharmacy with the doctors. I downloaded an app, a translation app. So that's the way I was basically communicating.
Okay, so talk to me about how you're starting to feel better. Like, what were those moments?
So after my first week of session, I started doing a little bit. After my first week of session, I started doing a little bit of squat training. We normally just do squats like sitting, standing, sitting, standing. But this was more of just holding my squat position. And that's the most basic thing that you ever do in like Kung Fu as well. So I started testing myself by putting a timer as to how many seconds or how many minutes I can hold myself for.
That was after the first week?
After my first week, because they told me that, you should do these things in your room and, standing on your toes, making your calves tight and your quads tight. So there were certain exercises that I was doing that they told me to in the room and also out there.
I don't mean this as a joke, but did you have your Xbox?
No, I didn't have my Xbox.
Did you have anything like that?
No, nothing. I was just so focused on... So whenever I had my sessions, my therapy sessions with the doctors in the temple, I had certain things that I had to do post the sessions by myself in the room or just, in my hostel. And majority of my time, I used to just walk around. I used to just observe things. I used to watch the monks training, and I used to just be like, wow, this is something that I really want to do. So when you start picturizing yourself wanting to be somewhere, you're doing it already. That's the first step of getting there. That's the first thing I learned in Shaolin Temple. And the second thing I learned was listening, to learn to listen really well, because we majorly just listen to reply, to respond. But Shaolin taught me listen to understand, to comprehend. That is one major lesson that I got. So whenever anybody asks me what is the one main big thing that you took from Shaolin Temple, I always say to listen.
You spent several years in the Shaolin Temple.
Yes, I spent precisely 4 years. 4 years, yeah.
So from doing those first squats and feeling like you're getting strong again and visualizing yourself strong again, when did you start to understand that you were going to be there for a while?
So after my second month, I took my visa for 6 months because that's the maximum amount of visa I could take. After my second month, I started training. My leg had already gotten much, much better. I started, you know, started jogging a little bit. I started, you know, one leg jumping just on the spot to make my leg stronger. And duck walks, frog jumps, slowly, slowly. I was getting better gradually because obviously, you know, the therapy was helping me. My first session with my master, his name is Shi Yanfeng. He's known as Maoge. Lao Maoge, like the old cat brother, but yeah. And he saw me with my hair the first time in the first month. And the second time when he saw me, I was bald and he didn't recognize me. And he knew that I was going through this therapy. So that's why I was not attending all the training sessions, because the day I had my sessions, I was not allowed to train that day with my master. So there were certain exercises that I needed to do in my room or by the doctors to give it rest to recover. And he saw me. He's like, "Oh, you shaved your head?" I said, "Yeah. I just wanted to, you know, get in the, be amongst them and, you know, be one of them to get the focus straight." And they were like, "Yeah, I mean, you know, you all are foreign disciples, you're all foreign students, so it's not mandatory for you guys. But for us monks, it's mandatory." And he was really lenient with foreign students, I would say. That's what I realize now, because obviously in the West, you know, you're not allowed to raise voice, you're not allowed to, you know, use like a stick or a staff to, you know, just, you know, tap on the butt or tap on the back to hit the student or something. Not in a very aggressive way. But just to, you know, get the focus straight. So he was really, you know, cautious about all those things. But I made a friend who came for like a week from Costa Rica. His name is Marco. And he was like my blessing in disguise. So we used to go for meditation together. And it was snowing a lot. There used to be snowstorms, snowfall, like really, really bad ones. We used to, majority of the times you were doing indoor training. So I told him, he was like, "Hey, Marco, you know, I come from like this Indian culture, and for us, you know, masters, you know, raising voice, and it's pretty okay. I'm okay with it, you know, doesn't matter. But, you know, he's just kind of lenient, I feel, because he's scared of, you know, these foreign students coming and going and, you know, they getting offended or something. But he does his good training. But, you know, I think I want to reach out to him and write him a letter in Chinese, if you don't mind writing me and helping me, because he speaks fluent Chinese. He was studying in China. And he asked me, "Okay, yeah, sure. What do you want to write?" So I said, "I want to write saying that, you know, I really like the training that he's giving me and he's looking after me and, you know, he's coordinating well with the doctors. But I also want to mention him that, you know, whatever he wants me to do as a student, the way he thinks Chinese people would do, just treat me as one of them, not as a foreign student." That was my only request, in a very humble way. So he wrote and I gave it to him. And the day I gave it to him, he was just looking at me, like just surprised. And he just went like, okay, good. And that's the only, you know, few words he used to say in English. And I used to be like, shishi, you know, like, "Thank you." And then he started becoming really different. His totally, everything just changed. Yeah.
So he saw you in a different light.
Yeah, he did. I think he felt that there was something different about me. He knew that I was on a mission. I think he already figured that out, because whenever we had any kind of, a few months passed, and on the fourth month, I think, in my fourth month, that's when my parents were coming to visit me and see me if I was doing fine. he saw me do like a really basic form, you know, basic fist form. And he's like, you know, I like, you have the passion, you have the fire in you, but just try to relax a little bit. Your body's too tense. You need to access, you need to stretch more. And I said, yes, Shifu, you know, I'm gonna work on that. But yeah, because he always gave examples, me as an example to other students to, you know, be more passionate and be more like having that fire inside of your, when you're doing it. So basically, if there's no passion in what you're doing, it doesn't make sense doing it.
How did you know he was the right master?
Well, that's a very, you know, that's reminiscing on now. He kept on challenging me. He kept on putting challenges in front of me. And I was like, he's the one. Because obviously my letter helped, you know, break that ice between us. And he knew, like I said, he knew I was on a mission. So I think he kept on putting hurdles in front of me to get past it by performing better and better and better. And he is, he's not just my master. He's also, you know, he's always been a friend. He's been a father figure. And he's just been everything to me. You know, I really look up to him a lot.
So at what point was your knee fully healed?
In my 7th month. And my 6th month was, after my 6 months, I came back to Mumbai for a short period of time to renew my visa. And that's when I told my parents that I would need their financial help a little bit, like around 25 to 30% for supporting me to stay another 6 months because I was really enjoying what I was doing. I hadn't told them that I was wanting to stay for really, really long. I just told them, oh, just another 6 months. And I came back. I had just a few sessions left to recover my knee completely. Then that's the time I was running, I was jumping. But I wasn't jumping as high as I should be. My 7th month was where, because we had entered summer, it was July. And summer was, you know, I was feeling really strong. I was really feeling like I'm like, wow, I just feel so new. And I was never shocked about my improvement and my progress because I was doing the right thing because I was listening to exactly what they were telling me to do. I was doing what they were asking me to do. And I was the flow, basically.
Earlier, you mentioned to me offline that soccer was your first love.
Yeah.
And you've fully recovered. Did you ever once think, I'm going to go back to pro soccer?
I actually never thought about soccer that time. But there were some students who came to see us, you know, perform in the temple. And they invited me to play soccer in their university. And that's when I was like, yeah, I still have that touch. You know, I haven't lost it. But I never thought of, you know, going back to soccer. I felt Shaolin Temple is the place that, you know, rejuvenated me completely and gave me a second life, I would say.
Similar question. You come from a Bollywood family. Right. Your dad's a director. Right. You could have done that as well. You're fully healed, you're fully recovered, you could have gone back.
So there was a lot of pressure from my family for me to, whatever martial arts I was learning, you know, those things that seemed very fancy. They wanted me to use those expertise in the movies immediately, or at least, you know, come back and start working on that as an actor. And I wasn't ready. I was never ready for that. At that point of time, I was just in the mindset of serving the temple, of training, extracting as much knowledge as possible. I used to train 10 to 12 hours a day. I trained for a year and a half, and that's when, you know, I ran out of my savings and I was leaving the temple. I was fluent with my Chinese by then. I became really fluent after like my 9th month, and that's when I started translating for people. I know. It just comes off as, yeah.
What?
It's very shocking because people are like, you learned Mandarin just to communicate basic in 9 months. I said, yeah, because I knew that I was going to be there for long and I want to survive there. And the only source of survival is knowing the language. And they're like, oh, how did you do that? I had apps. I got books. I listened to people. There were some students who came and went, you know, they knew Chinese. So it was just, you know, how you learn on the streets. It was just the same feeling. That's how I learned. And that's the progress that the temple was observing me. They were like, oh, this boy was here for 6 months to fix his leg. But then he comes back for another 6 months. And then another 6 months. And now, you know, he's recovered. He's training a lot. You know, he does amazing stuff. He speaks fluent Chinese. He's helped so many people. Oh, he also attends Buddhist and philosophy and culture classes, Buddhist philosophy and culture classes. And he's the only non-Chinese national who's in that class because he speaks Chinese. That's why. And I was just loving the whole process of, you know, learning the three basic principles. I was just surrounded by it. Slowly, slowly, I started understanding some medical terms. So I started learning acupressure, you know, body points. And I told them I don't have any money to give them anymore. You know, I'm done. My education was for 1.5 year with y'all. And I have to go. And they were like, oh, okay. Are you ever going to come back? I said, yeah, probably, you know, if I save up later on in the future, I will come back. And they were like, okay, just hang on, you know, you should just 1 second wait. We're going to have a meeting and, you know, we want to come back to you. I said, okay, wow. I think empathized with my situation financially or whatever. And they saw me as an asset as well. That this non-Chinese boy speaks fluent language. You know, he's so, he surrendered himself and he's just like one of us. He just adapted the culture so well. Let's give him an opportunity to be one of us. And that's when they told me that I could enter the temple as a warrior monk. And I would be having services and duties to the temple. And I said, okay. I was just like, I'm an introvert, so I'm very shy. So I was just saying, yes, yes, okay, whatever you say. And, you know, inside my heart, inside my body, I was just like, whoa, what has just happened right now? Like, am I getting am I becoming a warrior monk? Am I going to be training with the warrior monks who I have, like, looked up to for, you know, since the first day I've been here? And I went to my master. I was like, master. I was like, shifu, ni tingo ma. And you're like, did you hear? And he's like, yeah, you know, I was in the meeting too. I was like, so, like, what does this mean? He's like, yeah, just, you know, go with them. You don't have to come with me anymore. I was like, so you're not going to train me? And then he's like, no, now you're going to be training with the seniors, like the monks, you know. I started, you know, having duties and services, just all the monks were doing inside the temple, the rituals, the ceremonies, the traditions. I was a part of everything. I used to get paid from the temple for my shows, for being part of the ceremonies and rituals. You know, we get like a appreciation red envelope, they say. And life has just changed. And before becoming a monk, you know, I came to India to renew my visa for the last time because I was getting a visa for a longer time. There was a little bit of dramatic showdown between me and my father. My father was not happy that I was becoming a monk because he's like, you're getting deviated from your focus of your career. You know, your films is something that you wanted to do and now you should be doing that. And, you know, everything's, you know, there out here for you to learn and be a part of the industry. And you're just like becoming a monk. I was like, Dad, I have to go. This is something that I really need to do. And this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Nobody in this world has ever got this opportunity. I mean, after Bodhidharma, there has never been an Indian who was adopted by the temple to become a warrior monk. So I'm really thankful and grateful to the opportunity that I've got. And I'm, I wouldn't say I've done justice to my service. I wish I would have just stayed much longer, but too much meditation, too much of training got me to realization that knowledge is just not for you. Knowledge is to share and to help. So that's why I had to leave the temple because I just couldn't be living in the temple and, you know, spreading knowledge. The culture is lost in India and I want to, you know, make people realize and make them aware of, you know, where this came from.
And if you can, describe a warrior monk, because I'm sure you've lived it. You are a warrior monk. What is it?
Firstly, before I elaborate on the warrior monk topic, I would like to convey my sincere and show gratitude to the headmaster of the Shaolin Temple. He is everyone's master, the abbot of the temple, Shi Yongxin, Shifu. He is the one who is a person with a great heart, who had a meeting with the warrior monk leader. It's called Piao Ge. Ge is basically elder brother, but he's the warrior monk leader. Then my master, they had all these meetings, and you know, they're the one who gave me all these opportunities and made me a warrior monk. Warrior monk duties. So there are two kinds of monks. There are warrior monks and scholar monks. Warrior monks are the ones who are the young ones who are training in martial arts, who are training other people in martial arts, who are going for shows and spreading the knowledge of martial arts through the Shaolin culture, through the Shaolin temple. Basic duties that on everyday basis, the duties are, you know, cleaning the training hall, arranging the weapons, going to the, you know, the dining hall, cleaning it, serving, you know, there's a ceremony that happens every time for breakfast and lunch. Dinner, we never have ceremonies. So cleaning, serving, eating after everyone's done eating, then, you know, cleaning again. Traditions of, you know, holding things. Basically, a lot of duty. Everything that's related to, you know, any of the ceremonies, the traditions, everything, the young blood has to be there to hold, to carry, to be there, to guard. Everything is just the warrior monk duty. And scholar monks are the one where they're more senior. They've spent serving the temple for many years. Their vows are really higher than the warrior monks. And they're the one who are basically more on the Buddhist teachings, the prayers, the structure. You know, there are many structures in the temple. So every structure has a meaning out there. So they're protecting the structures if any tourists, because it's a tourist place now, you know. Many tourists come, there are thousands and thousands of tourists that come every day. So to tell them, to speak to them, to guide them, if anybody wants to pray. So these scholar monks take care of everything on the intellectual and I would say more on the education side, the prayer side.
You mentioned that your goal wasn't to stay in the temple forever, but it was to do what you're doing now and to spread this medicine out into the world and bring culture, this culture back to India.
Right.
Could you talk about that a little bit more, what you're doing?
So I also became a professional archer in the temple. That was the last opportunity the temple gave me. And on basis of that, I started meditating a lot because archery requires a lot of meditation. It's a meditation in itself. It's one of the most difficult things that I've ever done in my life, archery. And we eight monks were sent to Guangzhou for intense training, 10 hours a day, for 3 months to enter competitions because we were adapting archery as a new weapon, as a new culture in the Shaolin culture. This was the history, in the history of Shaolin Temple, the first time something was happening. I think I was destined to be a warrior because in any of our Indian mythological warrior stories, the warrior is always an archer. Arjuna, Eklavya, Chandragupta Maurya, these are all Indian mythological warriors. And everything was just happening unintentionally. Everything was just happening organically. And then I thought to myself, I've gained so much of knowledge, so much of training. What is the real use of this? So I started meditating on those thoughts. And the time was for me to evolve and get out of the temple. I discussed with my master. I was actually planning to go to South Korea to learn more different martial arts. I really respect and follow Bruce Lee and his philosophies. And, you know, he said, adapt what is useful and reject what's not. So you can gain knowledge from different places, but in the end, you're just going to adapt and do what is good for you. But then I got an opportunity to come to LA. Some of my friends were stuntmen in the Jackie Chan stunt team, and I met some of them in China and they told me that, hey, you know, we're going to be training you, you know, you should come and train with us. I said, okay, cool. You know, one day, you know, let's see what can we, something in the future. My family lives in LA and my sister was delivering a baby that time and I had not seen my family in many years. And my sister was like, you know, if you can make it, you know, for the delivery day. It's a big day, family, you know, in Indian culture, family, you know, everybody just wants to be there, you know. And I said, I'm going to try. I'm not sure. You know, I'm planning to go to Korea to train. And that was my plan. But then, you know, just LA thing happened, training with my friends, the Jackie Chan stunt team members, a few of them. And family was here. Everything just happened. And I stayed here 6 months learning, training, cinematic fighting. So whatever I learned in Shaolin was mainly real, how you apply it. Because that's what Kung Fu is, how you apply a movement and where you apply it. That is what Kung Fu is. But cinematically, it's totally different. Because I was like, I want to learn these, you know, what are these guys doing? These are like such fancy moves or whatever these guys are doing can be, you know, blended with my real martial art knowledge and, you know, presented some way or the other in India. And I trained for 6 months with them. I went back to India, had a meeting with a few people. And when I was in China, when the Warrior Monk title came to me, I got a lot of media and news coverage because it became a really big news out there. A director from Shanghai, his name is Alan Liu, he saw the topic and he approached me and the temple to make a short documentary on my life because he found my life very interesting. So there's a documentary made on me already, a short documentary. It's gone for various film festivals. And on basis of my learning and my journey, everything was just, like I said, it was coming organically. Everything comes with patience and with time. Now there's a docuseries being made and I was just looking for the right platform to present my experience, to present this knowledge of martial arts, medicine and philosophy, where people get awareness of this. And here I am, you know, getting trained even now. Spending time with family, getting trained even now and waiting for the writers to come in and pitch the story over here to you know, the big platforms that's out there. And we've locked down some things and looking forward to spread the knowledge and give the knowledge of Shaolin in the true authentic and essence.
And have you talked to the head or your former master at Shaolin about sort of what's happening?
I have briefed them as to what is happening. And, you know, the headmaster of the abbot of the temple, Shifu Shi Yongxin, and my first master, Shi Yanfeng, they're happy as to what I'm doing because they have given me the opportunity to spread the Shaolin culture and open a Shaolin Temple India branch, an authentic one. Like the first warrior monk adopted from the temple and, you know, goes from the temple, living there for 4 years continuously without any breaks. Being one of the warrior monks, and I think I want to do that in the future, which comes with time. Again, you know, I'm going to be patient. I'm not going to run to do it. But right now, coming from the film background, so I'm blending my Shaolin knowledge and culture and experience, that passion of mine, with my passion for films, which is also in the family, and presenting it out there.
Looking back at the knee injury,
yeah,
and the poor recovery, do you look at it as like a really great thing? You know,
I've had so much of travel in my life. I've had so much of so many experiences, so many tragedies, disappointments, good moments as well. Definitely, I look back at it and I think about it as, if that wouldn't have happened to me, I wouldn't be in the place that I am right now. I mean, doing all those crazy kicks and flips and jumps and everything, yeah, that's really nice. But I've always wanted to have a story to tell to my life and give it to people out there and inspire them and help them. That's always been my motive. I don't know what I would be doing. And, you know, I've been reading a lot of autobiographies of famous people. And till the time, like I said in the beginning, you don't take that big risk in life. You will never know whether you're worth it to do something that you want to do or not. And I think me deciding to becoming a monk, me doing to China, you know, coming all those barriers, the hurdles, and, you know, my master challenging me on different things, language barriers, everything, you know, I overcame all those things. And it was because of passion. You need to have passion for anything. And that's what got me where I am right now. And I look forward to inspire people, help people. Empathy and compassion is one of the main principles in Buddhist philosophy as well, which should be generally in life. And Buddhism, let me just make it clear, is not a religion, it's a lifestyle. Shaolin culture teaches you lifestyle, a good way of lifestyle, to live healthy. And martial arts is basically practice for yourself, to keep yourself healthy and fit, and in extreme situations to defend yourself and not to use it in, you know, dangerous situations to attack or, you know, be aggressive. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, one thing is clear, your story is definitely inspiring. But it's also just beginning, right? I mean, you're very young.
Yeah.
It's just getting going.
Yeah. Yeah, I am very young, and, you know, I train every day. And I just hope, you know, many people just inspire me. Like, you inspire me as to what you're doing. You know, it's just amazing. You know, I try to find inspiration from every person I come across, every person I talk to. I'm being very honest. And because you get to learn every day. You're always going to be a student all your life. There's no end to practice and knowledge. You're always learning, 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 learning. And yeah, I hope, you know, this docuseries, which is, you know, has a green signal, and, you know, hopefully we get good people on board and make it a really good platform to inspire people, help people, and get the culture back to India. And let people know that, hey, Shaolin culture, Kung Fu, the inception is from India. You know, people are not aware of these things, but you only realize the value of something that you've lost.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me here today.
What an extraordinary life story. If this story moved you, help enable our mission and keep this advertising-free podcast going by chipping in $5 at bellystory.com. I'm responsible and accountable for this podcast, but I don't do it alone. Milos Brochetta is our sound engineer. Artie Wu is our advisor, and many others have helped along the way to bring the story to life. Thank you for listening. I'm David All, and this is Belly of the Beast Life Stories and Beyond. Thank you for rating and reviewing this podcast on Apple Podcasts and sharing it with a friend or two. Stay tuned. I'm working on some stories that you need to hear.